Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, June 2nd, 2023. Human Rights Watch says the UN Security Council should do more to stop the fighting in Sudan.
To date, what is the world's global body when it comes to peace and security has not stepped up and not been up to what is at stake right now.
And officials in South Sudan say young men and women can bring lasting peace to the country.
African indigenous wisdom tells us that the person who owns the load must carry it from the heavier side. Therefore, the movement towards peace and sustainable development in South Sudan must out of necessity involve the young people who must be active participants in that process.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. With the latest ceasefire just a memory, residents of Sudan's capital, Khartoum, took shelter as fighting and shelling ramp up today as the two military combatants seek advantages before returning to the bargaining table. The army announced it had brought reinforcements to the capital from the other parts of Sudan to participate in what they call operations in the Khartoum area to weaken its former paramilitary ally, the Rapid Support Forces. So far, neither side has managed to gain decisive advantages since the fighting began 7 weeks ago. The regular army has air power and heavy weaponry, but analysts say the paramilitary are more mobile and better suited for urban warfare. Neither side seemed to be worried about sanctions announced yesterday by the U.S. and threats of more action if the parties continue to destroy their country, according to a senior American official. The U.N. Security Council was set to review its mission in Sudan, whose mandate expires tomorrow. Aid agencies worry the conflict dragging on and destabilizing Sudan's neighbors with floods of refugees. The UN says 1.2 million people have been displaced within Sudan and more than 425,000 have fled abroad, while some 25 million people, more than half of the population, are in need of aid and protection. Still on Sudan, as the United Nations Security Council members are expected to meet later today to review the mandate of the UN mission in Sudan, Human Rights Watch is calling on members to take action against the parties that are committing atrocities in Sudan's conflict. The United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan was established in 2020 to support the country's transition to democracy. Lalita Bader is a Human Rights Watch Africa Division Deputy Director. She tells my colleague Nabil Biagio the Council must consider imposing arms embargo on Sudan as well as expanding the mandate of the mission to include monitoring and reporting on human rights violations that are being committed in the country's ongoing conflict.
What we want is for the Security Council to be much more active on Sudan. I mean, we are now almost 2 months into the conflict, the impact on civilians, whether it's in Khartoum and also in Darfur, in particular, has been absolutely devastating. And to date, what is the world's global body when it comes to peace and security has not stepped up and not been up to what is at stake right now. So what we're calling for are several things. I mean, we are obviously calling on the African group members of the Security Council to support action at the level of the Security Council. There are certain actions, and notably the call for an expanded arms embargo. As you know, there is already an arms embargo on Darfur in place, but what needs to happen right now, given what we are finding in terms of the impact, notably of heavy explosive weaponry being used in Khartoum, for example, on civilians, to limit the ability of the warring parties to continue to harm civilians. At the same time, we're talking about the renewal of the mandate of the UN mission. Now, since its establishment, we have been pressing and calling on the mission to expand its work and to prioritize its work on Darfur. As we know, the violence in Darfur predates the recent fighting. Since the pullout of the peacekeeping forces, we've seen a massive uptake in attacks on communities, notably in West Darfur. And we've seen very limited Security Council action on this. And we've also not seen the UN mission prioritizing what is a mandate to do work around protection of civilians and human rights reporting. So even though the context right now is very complex, we are calling on the UN mission and all the UN agencies really to look at how they can strengthen their capacity to monitor and report on the human rights situation in Darfur in particular.
June 3rd, when the UNITAM's mandate is supposed to expire, is also the anniversary of a violent event where security forces in Sudan dispersed protests in front of the army headquarters in Khartoum in 2019, where you report over 100 civilian protesters were killed. And up to this date, families of victims are waiting for justice and accountability. What do you have to say about that?
I mean, it's a devastating anniversary, of course, and I think in many ways should be a moment of reflection of the international community and again of members of the Security Council as to the failings in many ways of the international approach on Sudan since then, in the last 4 years. And it has been clear time and again that accountability, even during the short-lived transition, and obviously even more so since the coup, has again and again been neglected. It was not prioritized by international partners of Sudan during the transition. It's obviously been completely ignored since the coup. And yet, we are seeing the direct consequences in events in the last 2 months of the failure to hold those responsible for these serious abuses to account. I think it's important to underscore that both warring parties have a very notorious record when it comes to violations against civilians, whether it's in Darfur, whether it's in Khartoum, as you mentioned, during the clampdown on protests over the last 4 years, and the failure of the international community to make accountability a priority, which is obviously something which the social movements, which resistance committees and many Sudanese have repeatedly called for, is once again having a devastating impact and consequences on civilians in the country. And I think in many ways, the need for strong investigative bodies is now more evident than ever before.
That's Laetitia Bada, Human Rights Watch Africa Division Deputy Director. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Italy this past hour. Conflict analysts say the African Union appears to be unable to exert influence over the warring groups in Sudan. A power struggle erupted in mid-April between the two main factions of the ruling military government, the Sudanese Armed Forces and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. The United Nations says the violence has so far claimed the life of almost 2,000 people, injured about 5,000 and displaced tens of thousands. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The AU's Peace and Security Council, the PSC, is supposed to prevent, manage and resolve conflicts. According to its brief, it's intended to facilitate timely and efficient responses to conflict and crisis situations in Africa. After a PSC meeting on Saturday, chairperson of the AU Commission, Moussa Faki Mahamat, said it remained dedicated to establishing peace in Sudan.
The African Union and partners called on the African Union, United Nations, and IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, to engage with the Arab League and the European Union, the Troika, and other bilateral actors to immediately engage the leadership of the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces towards negotiated solution of this crisis.
Mahamat said the AU would establish what he called an inclusive political process to encourage dialogue among prominent military, civilian, political and social actors in Sudan. But analysts say so far the AU hasn't been able to establish any kind of authority over the belligerents.
The bottom line is actually the African Union doesn't have leverage over these generals. General Burhan and his former deputy, Himeti, from the RSF forces, who are basically fighting it out in the streets of Khartoum and the army.
Liesl Vordran is a senior advisor at the International Crisis Group. She says Sudan's army chief, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and RSF commander Mohamed Hemeti Dagalo aren't listening to anyone, but appear to have particular contempt for the AU.
So who can stop them? Obviously powerful states who have leverage on actors like this. Saudi Arabia, but the League of Arab States as well. Egypt is an important country. The US has lost some of its leverage in the Horn of Africa, generally in that part of the world, but is still an important player. There are sanctions against these individuals. They have a lot of their funds, their money in the US or in Saudi Arabia. So the African Union finds itself in a position where, as we felt actually in Libya in 2011, sort of sidelined and struggling to come up with solutions that will last.
The crisis group is calling for a united international response to the conflict in Sudan.
Different countries, sometimes in wars like this, side with different rebels or the state. But for now, everybody wants to seem to have a solution, but they all have their own solution. So rather get behind the African Union. I mean, the African Union could get an intervention force to, if there's a ceasefire, to ensure that the ceasefire is being upheld, you know. The ideal would be for the African Union to be given that opportunity to lead this initiative.
Mahamat says he's sending emissaries to the states neighboring Sudan as part of his effort to strengthen the search for a common approach to finding a sustainable solution to the crisis. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the French medical charity MSF says more money is needed to avert health crisis at a Kenyan refugee camp. Find out why after the break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Officials from the United Nations and the government of South Sudan are calling on the country's young people to promote peaceful coexistence. The United Nations Population Fund representative in South Sudan says young South Sudanese should be involved in peace processes to achieve a lasting peace in the country. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Ademola Olajide, representative of the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, in South Sudan says young men and women should be included in peace engagements in the country in order to achieve sustainable peace. Olajide says, since 33.3% of the South Sudanese population is between the age bracket of 15 to 35 years, investing in young men and women could lead to the stability in the country.
African indigenous wisdom tells us that the person who owns the load must carry it from the heavier side. Therefore, the movement towards peace and sustainable development in South Sudan must out of necessity involve the young people who must be active participants in that process.
Some young men and women in South Sudan say they are not often involved in activities meant for young people in the country. Taban Paride Lakasomoy says managers working on activities meant for young men and women in South Sudan should be transparent.
We need a proper channel of communication between partners and stakeholders in case of service delivery to the community. You and I and other stakeholders must be involved. We want to see what they are doing because the figures always read 1,000 people reach, 1,000 malnourished children reached in Eastern Equatoria. Do we have 1,000 malnourished children in Eastern Equatoria?
UNESCO's country representative in South Sudan says the country's young men and women are working to promote South Sudan across the world through several activities, including sports.
It gives us great pleasure to work with young people because young people are not a problem. They are the solution. They are the present. They are the future of this nation. And it is also simple to say so because, as we know, this week the FIBA World Cup is visiting South Sudan because the young people of this country have already started to put their country on the global map.
The officials spoke on Friday while launching a $3 million peace project in Juba. The project, called Youth Leading Peace, aimed to promote and formalize participation of young men and women in peace-building activities across South Sudan. Pierre Philip Michael, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Peacebuilding, says the project will involve young men and women in peacebuilding aimed at safeguarding national and regional security.
Through a local community youth-led process designed as a strategic action for peace and security in our country, with this project, we are indeed implementing a peace agreement. The peace agreement alludes to the importance of young people in this country who make more than 70% of the population. So without engaging the young people in the peace processes, the young people will be left behind.
The 2 years project is expected to empower young men and women in the country, 10 states, and the 3 administrative area to lead peace-building processes and security agenda. The United Nations mission in South Sudan and the non-profit Search for Common Ground will also participate in implementing the project. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kenya, where the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says more funding is urgently needed to prevent a health catastrophe in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camps. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, warns of a looming health crisis in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camps, where a cholera outbreak is spreading. Hassan Mayaki is the MSF country director in Kenya.
Taking immediate action to address the alarming sanitary condition and prevent the future spread of disease, MSF calls the government of Kenya and the UNICEF to fund durable solution for the refugees confined within the camp at Dadaab. The 3 camps of Dagahale, Ifo and Hagadera currently host more than 245,000 registered refugees.
He said a cholera outbreak in the camps in Kenya's northeast has affected 2,786 people, and there is an imminent risk of other diseases. The population of the camps has grown rapidly in recent months to more than 300,000 refugees due to an extended drought in Somalia. That led to severe overcrowding and put pressure on existing services, including supplies of drinking water and latrines. The medical aid group is now calling for immediate action from the international community and aid agencies to address the unsanitary conditions and overcrowding in the camps. Dr. Nitya Uday Raj is the MSF medical coordinator in Kenya.
MSF as a medical organization has invested in treating the patients, but we feel the gap is bigger. Cholera needs a coordinated response that includes medical and also the water and sanitation part. And since we can't do everything, we are saying let's prioritize other aspects of cholera. Let it not become a forgotten issue that it becomes endemic.
Cholera is spread through tainted water sources, and the outbreak is linked to reductions in essential water and sanitation services in the camps, such as lack of clean water, soap, and latrines. MSF, which runs a hospital in Dadaab's Dagahale camp, has reported more than 1,120 cases of cholera and 2 deaths in that area alone since the outbreak. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We begin with this voice note a listener sent to us.
Hello, John Tanzi and Nabil Biagio. I've never witnessed what is so called post-marriage, but I witnessed yesterday at my home house, whereby the daughter of my sister, whom I have been educated, her from primary 1 up to primary 6 at a primary school. She has been staying with me. I've been paying her school fees, paying everything she needs. But her parents came yesterday, especially the brother and the dad came and drug her forcefully out of my room to force her to be married forcefully to an old man. Therefore, I'm appealing to the government of Lagos State to see the issues of post-marriage because it is common in the state. Because girls' education is very important. As the saying goes, you educate a girl and the girl is educating a nation. Thank you.
And this listener says, Dear John Tanzi and Nabil Biagio, I am Thon Mamur in Kampala. I wish the government of South Sudan would evacuate the still remaining trapped South Sudanese citizens in Khartoum, since the Sudan government withdrew from ceasefire talks in Saudi Arabia. This listener, who identifies as a concerned citizen, says the extension of South Sudan's arms embargo is a good move. The money that the government wanted to use for buying arms, let them use it for other developmental projects. Another fan says, Hello, VOA. Call me Daniel Dundagbai from Ragmajok in Lake States. The extension of arms embargo by the UN Security Council on South Sudan has nothing to do with the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. South Sudan's government needs to collect the little available arms in the hands of civilians in order to arm and deploy unified necessary forces for peace to prevail. We are not fighting peace to claim for lifting the arms embargo, but we are seeking for a just peace. Jacob Dior Machweng from Ural in Lake State writes, Imposing sanctions on the 2 warring parties' leaders in Sudan by the Biden administration is not enough to stop the war in Khartoum. The White House should look into where both parties get support militarily, because the weapons being used are modern ones. I don't want to finger point anywhere, but the world is aware that enemies of America are supplying weapons to either of them. This listener says, Hello, John Tanzi and Nabil Biagio. Good evening. This is Bot Bim Dotai in Juba, Mangaten. There is 2 things that are disturbing the minds of every South Sudanese. The skyrocketing food prices in the market, which are making most of South Sudanese families not able to put something on the table. The continuous looting and attacks on the World Food Program that came from youth in Bor Town need to be addressed urgently, otherwise there will be no more support from the humanitarian assistance agencies. Thanks, may God bless you all. Mading Malwal Alwong in Juba says, I always find it so hard to come to terms with the imperialistic attitude of U.S. presidents towards African countries. All U.S. presidents behave as if they're de facto president of Africa. We are a poor continent by virtue of greedy leaders, but we won't surrender our freedom, moral and cultural values to any group or country in this world. We will resist LGBTQ in any way or form with the last drop of our blood. We will not allow unnecessary cultures to undermine our values. Saber Aiza Khamis in Yambio of Western Equatoria State writes, Hi Nabil, the exercise of extending the arms embargo on South Sudan by the UN Security Council will keep on frustrating every effort. The best for the UN and other international community bodies is to embark on sponsoring peace efforts. After peace prevailing, thereafter justice and accountability will follow. Otherwise, serving two different critical observations at once will affect this country. At the end, the common man is the one suffering. Peace first, other things follow. Thanks. Peter Gonyanyang Majongdul in Block 3 in Bortown says, Dear Tanza and Nabil, with the increase in cases of measles, it needs more efforts to increase the coverage, especially in remote areas where accessibility is a challenge, in order to eradicate the killer disease across the country. Another South Sudan in Focus fan says, Hello, VOA Africa. I am Asega Ludanga from DRC Congo. My message goes to all South Sudanese journalists for their hard work in the country during their moment of reporting news in the country, including VOA journalists from Washington Studio 14. Congratulations for updating South Sudanese on what is happening in the country. Thanks, VOA Africa. Samuel Remo Inye says, Hi, John Tanzan and Nabil Biagio. If civil society activists were to be our politicians, they would have brought the challenges this country is going through to an end. There would have been no tribal hatred among the 64 tribes of South Sudan as we had fought before in 1983 to 2010, where we have determined our right for separation. Mal Adao Mal in Seattle, Washington says, Hello, South Sudan in Focus. Buying arms for South Sudan is not an economic reform to fix our collapsed economy. And if they think they have money, why not use it for agriculture to boost the economy? Many thanks to the UN Security Council for having done the will of the South Sudanese innocent citizens.
Views in this segment does not represent the views of Voice of America or South Sudan in Focus. Keep your text and voice messages brief, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with the song Mata Kore by Mawa. Listening to Mawa with that beautiful song entitled Mama Mata Kore. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and our engineer Helen, we wish you a good weekend. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mama, matakore, dunia de, yauzede.